Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, welcome back to Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Steve Barber of Upstream Data to discuss, well, Bitcoin mining, among other things. We go through Upstream Data's product line, also talk a lot about how he sees the new cycle coming forth into 2024. And then I asked him a little bit about Bitcoin mining LARPs and what he thinks about AI and things like that. So one of my favorite conversations we've recorded this year so far. I've said that about a few shows, but this was a really fun time with Steve. So thank you to Upstream Data for making the show possible. Before we get to the show itself, also like to thank CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner, and Forman Master Your Mining for being lead sponsors for the show. You'll hear more from both these companies a little bit later in today's episode. Okay, two more things before we get into the show itself. One, Bitcoin Halving Party. You've probably heard it a bit here on the show if you've been listening consistently, but we're throwing a halving party here in Denver, Colorado on April 20th at the Independence Institute. If you want to join us, click below in the show notes. And lastly, go check out our new documentary, The Big Empty. It's a film about the Helios Bitcoin mine down in Spur, Texas, run by Galaxy Digital. We went down there a few times to film a 27-minute short film / documentary. So go check that out. It's a good Friday night view with the family. Not too Bitcoin heavy, honestly. More about how Bitcoin impacts local communities. So go check that out and share with a friend if you've already enjoyed it. Okay, a few words from our sponsors, and then let's get right to the show. Hey, listeners, let's talk about revolutionizing your mining operation with Forman. This isn't your average management tool. It's an all-in-one solution for reducing costs and significantly boosting your revenue. Forman brings a cutting-edge dashboard to your fingertips, empowering you with automated energy strategies. This means not only curtailing around real-time prices, but also strategically enhancing your profit margins through demand response. It's about leveraging energy efficiency to its fullest potential. With Forman, you get a system that scales with your business, inventory management for assets, infrastructure integration, and business intelligence. Forman elevates the cash flow and production of your entire operation. To see how Forman can redefine your mining operation standards, visit Forman.mn. With Forman, you're not just managing a mining operation, you're setting a new standard in the industry.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
Steve, welcome to the Mining Pod.
Thanks for finally having me, man. I've been probably one of your most dedicated listeners. So I think I've listened to every episode.
Yeah. I mean, you're also a sponsor this last quarter. It was a stamp of approval.
Thank you. Yeah. It was an honor to do that. Oh, so I'm sure your prices are going through the roof next quarter. So
I'm trying.
We'll see if Upstream is still on there, but
we're trying to make this process a little better. I'd like to have someone sitting right here so then I don't have to stress about technical things.
Yeah. That'll come.
It will come one day at a time. But even on the show a few times, just remotely, so not as cool.
Yeah. Back in the earlier days, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And the last one I did was your Megamind article.
Right. Yeah, the elephant in the grid.
Which is actually where I want to start the conversation.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to remember what I wrote. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm calling you out right now. Okay, so the gist of it was, from a generation standpoint and from a decentralization standpoint, it doesn't make sense to have mega mines because it can be like a geopolitical target. And then like long term, they also don't fit into the economics of Bitcoin mining. That's how I would summarize it if you're looking back. Do you know your gist of it?
Yeah, I guess you could say that's the gist of it. I mean, the commentary I was putting out there was, our philosophy is that, you know, Bitcoin mining as a tech, like one of the most compelling aspects of it, it's a portable load. It doesn't have to be, you know, brick and mortar facilities. It can be all skidded, trailer mounted, and, you know, it can be placed right where the power is generated.
Yeah.
And naturally, I think the cost of power is always cheapest upstream, wherever mm-hmm. it's produced. So naturally, Bitcoin mining loads will continue to trend upstream in the energy mm-hmm. supply chain. I mean, like, you know, like every time, like I, even yesterday when I presented, I always sort of like, you know, there's every Bitcoin mining has the same infrastructure. There's power generation somewhere, mm. there's power distribution somewhere, and then there's the load. And I would say that we're going to continue to see Bitcoin mines move upstream on the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got my standard Bitcoin hat on. Tom Acero, you had him on there recently. You know, he's doing projects. He's got some with Kungsleden or
his Norwegian Bitcoin,
Swedish,
mine, whatever.
I can't pronounce it. But you know, they're merging with Cathedra. But Tom's done a really great job. Effectively co-locating his projects at power plants.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing he's leasing out the land next to them or something and setting up these mines.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, and the further you go downstream, you're building in the distribution costs for all the power. And it's not at all that doesn't make sense today, like to build mega mines where they're doing them. Like, you know, in that article, I just used Riot because I picked on Riot mainly just because they're the biggest and best mega miner in Texas, especially at the time, and probably will continue to be.
Yeah.
But the unit economics will continue to drive it to the lowest cost. That's only going to get more and more important over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like even Tom says, like rack space is really the scarcity.
Yeah.
Which really implies the cheap energy, low cost energy.
Yeah.
Low hash cost, right?
It's
the main thing. And I mean, in our company at Upstream, we have always done it right at the power source. Like that's naturally what we have to do for...
It's in the name.
And the root of the name is Upstream Oil and Gas, right? But I've since played into this concept that mining is clearly trending towards upstream in the energy stack, and that's where power is produced. I mean, that recent, that Talon Energy project that I think just got sold to Amazon Web Services, right? It was Amazon?
Yeah, it's crazy big.
Yeah, and then that's like a nuclear plant that had that, I don't know if it's through their subsidiary or however that worked, but they have a Bitcoin mining load mm-hmm. that's just, you know, constantly adding baseload to the plant.
And,
you know, you're seeing it at all the people working on the wind projects, like move up to the wind farms, solar projects move up to the solar farm and just cut out the middleman. Like, why are we dealing with utilities?
Yeah.
We are literally a competitor to utilities, both midstream natural gas.
Yeah.
Joel, a good friend of mine and mm-hmm. A customer of Upstream Data, like he did an awesome talk here at Empower just like an hour ago,
mm-hmm.
Basically talking about how midstream companies should take Bitcoin mining as a tool seriously, or they're going to lose to the competition who does.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have stranded natural gas and you can't get pipelines to your customer as the midstream guy, or it's like taking 2 years or whatever the bottlenecks they have.
Yeah.
If they don't integrate like options for these guys, like having a fleet of, you know, hash generators, like products we build or anything like to bring to the customer, even temporarily.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to lose to the competition at will. They're just going to get disrupted. And that was his whole speech about legacy, you know, businesses that have been around for decades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to have to either acquire companies that do it well, or they're going to have to start doing it themselves over time.
Mm-hmm.
Because Bitcoin's not going away. I don't think anyone listening to this pod thinks so. They shouldn't.
If you think that.
Yeah.
Before we jump down the hole too much, we should give a bio because now we have the CoinDesk audience, which is a little bit different. So
sure.
Yeah.
Bio. Well,
I was saying you did a bio on a podcast.
Well, you know, it depends on sometimes I have to go through, you know, the whole history of everything, but I'm basically a mechanical engineering background. I into oil and gas and started Upstream Data I was working on it in 2016, started in 2017. But I mean, my background is oil and gas production, like working with operations to optimize oil and gas production. And I started Upstream because we have this problem in Canada where we have not just stranded energy, like with stranded associated gas being vented and flared. We also have all these engines running well sites because they don't have utility power. And these engines are all running underloaded. So the first product I built, it was actually designed to convert an existing engine that was running, a hydraulic pump.
Yeah.
So this is not a generator. It's an engine running like a hydraulic system. And one of the first projects I did was we converted that engine. We added a generator to it.
Yeah.
So a through shaft alternator, kept the hydraulic pump to keep running the well site.
Yeah.
And then all that surplus power that engine could produce, because these engines are only producing like commonly like 20 to 50% of their capacity.
Yeah.
Like they're only, the load on the engine is way underloaded. And one of the problems with underloading engines, like you have low, if you run engines at low load, like continuously, you have low cylinder pressure and combustion and low cylinder temperatures. Mm-hmm. And what happens is like there's more oil that slips by the sealing rings, and effectively like ash is created. It causes issues with, it actually changes the internal volume of the cylinder because it builds up in the cylinder heads and stuff. Yeah. And that ends up in, it can cause pre-ignition and issues. Long story short, it causes engine maintenance problems.
Yeah.
So, you know, the talk I did, I was just talking about, you have all these like midstream oil and gas facilities with generators running the facility, like really nice big Waukesha generators or CAT engines. And things change, like either the engineers oversize it too much, which they commonly do because it's better, better to oversize than undersize. Yeah. And they'll even have redundancy, like a secondary standby generator just literally sitting for 99% of the time that comes online only when the prime engine goes down. And so how they deal with these maintenance problems, these higher frequency maintenance problems when these engines are underloaded, is they'll add load banks. And years ago, like I was comparing Bitcoin, back when everyone was comparing Bitcoin mining, saying it's a battery for energy. And I was like, no, it's not a battery. It doesn't store it. It's a consumer. It's more like a load bank.
Yeah.
So I was like memeing Bitcoin as like a smart load bank on the, on the.
But no one knew what a load bank was, so that was
Well, and then I since I just made up the term load center, and just used that because I don't like the term data center for mining.
Okay.
And honestly, like I called my company Upstream Data, strategically because I didn't want to call it like Upstream Bitcoin or something like Bit something because nobody, especially even back then, I knew that if I called anything related to Bitcoin, I would just have problems with even just getting deals done.
Yeah.
So I just made it more broad and took Upstream from Upstream Oil and Gas and took data from data centers and made Upstream Data. That was the logic.
Yeah.
But I since don't use the term data center because I really don't think it's comparable in any way to a data center.
Yeah.
Outside of the fact that it's a computer and it needs energy and needs internet.
Yeah.
But it has nothing like a data center in any way. It's more like a load center. And that's like a common term in the utility power industry, like different loads, they might refer to them as like load centers. So I call our products load centers now, because instead of portable data centers, which is like literally on my branding for years, still is on some of it.
You're big on like nomenclature, like the words
matter. I'm a stickler for like accuracy, like
English and like spelling.
I'm terrible. I'm an engineer. So like I failed like, you know, all my English classes where, you know, barely got by. Twitter's made me a little better at English because especially back in the days where you had to be concise. You'd have to like revise a tweet like 20 times just to like compacted. So English is not my forte.
But being correct with terminology is.
I just like being accurate. And like, I don't like calling them data centers because they're just not. And it gives people it's like a comfortable term. Like the finance industry is very comfortable with the term data center.
Yeah.
I don't like the term Bitcoin mining. It's just that's the standard. So you're not going to get anyone off that off that term. But even like Bitcoin mining used to be called Bitcoin generation. Mm-hmm. Like it was, you were generating Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And that's actually a better way to describe what mining is. Like you're generating Bitcoin. And you can almost argue like we're building Bitcoin generators, but again, it's not a battle I'm worried about changing anyone's mind on. But I do think defining things accurately is important.
It is. Words matter.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. So let's start calling them load centers, people.
Okay. We'll bookmark this part of the podcast.
There's no trademarks on load centers, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, no IP issues there.
No. Right?
Yeah, that's good. Going back to Upstream, the founding, you guys helped create or did create this whole sector for Bitcoin mining. Fast forward a few years, you guys have a full company up in Canada, building this out. You're moving to the US now.
Yeah.
What are some of like the products you guys offer and like ambitions for the company?
Yeah, we do a lot of cool stuff that I'm starting to show more on like Twitter.
Yeah,
like,
doing these walk-by videos are great.
Yeah, people seem to like that. Yeah. And honestly, like it's been really good since I started doing that. Like people, even just showing people in more detail why we make choices on how we do our designs, it's been important to show people, even if it's just like raw selfie footage.
Yeah.
That I'm just like walking through the shop while air compressors are turning on and stuff in the background, like zero production.
Yeah.
Which is our style, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's say this last, I've always had the same plan. My plan has not changed from day one with the company. Coming from oil field services, I think there's a lot of disruption that can be done. Nothing to do with Bitcoin. Just like straight run-of-the-mill oil field services around oil and gas production optimization. And oil and gas is a deep industry. Like, I know nothing about drilling. I've never been involved in drilling like that, the very upstream side of oil and gas development. I've always been on the production side, and that's where my interests are. So, like, my plan with Upstream is to continue into the broad oil field services market around production optimization.
Yeah.
I'm like ultra passionate as you see me about the Bitcoin world and the Bitcoin mining world, which I think most people who know me know.
Yeah.
Obsessed like you are and many people listening are.
I think you're a little notch above me though, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm deeply obsessed. Like I literally do nothing other than watch pods like yours. I want to know everyone's new tech, how it works, how I can integrate it. Like I was looking at Marathon's new two-phase stuff. Like all that stuff is hyper interesting. And I mean, we got a lot going on that we're working on, but I guess to start like the broadest, I'm trying to build Upstream into a very broad oil field services business.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try to do everything out there, but I would say that in my experience for production optimization, there's a huge gap to fill on making facilities, better telemetry, better automation, better production systems, better pumping systems, which was my background. And bringing new technology to that market and like updating it.
Gotcha.
Just offering better services. So
does that have to encompass Bitcoin or are you, I mean, you do stuff outside Bitcoin.
Everything I'm doing is related to our Bitcoin products because I'm leveraging what we're good at to do similar things. So when I started the company, I was subbing out the manufacturing to a fab shop that specialized in these self-framer steel buildings and for oil field. I ended up buying the owner out of that division. So I took over all the staff and machinery. And I got really lucky, to be honest, on the timing because Bitcoin was ripping, just started ripping. So my company started getting more and more sales. Oilfield was in the dumps, absolute dumps. They could not, there was no projects coming through on the building side.
Was this recent?
This was 2020.
Okay.
It was in that 2020 time frame. I can't remember exactly when that transaction happened. I think it was late 2020. And it was 2020, right? When the China ban was. Was that 2020?
It was summer 2021. It's like
it was 2021. June. It was just when the Bitcoin mining market started to uptick. And that was upticking while everything else was in the oil field was not.
Yeah.
So I got a steal of a deal on just acquiring this fab shop. And the nice thing was the oil market came back, mm-hmm. and then that fab shop, we got super busy building while we did Legacy.
Yeah.
And they never did any marketing. So we've been more locally doing some stuff to get the word out that we do that. And so like we're going to be building, like last year we built hundreds of like pump shacks. Like these are just like small buildings and enclosures to house other people's, other packagers' products, like maybe hydraulic skids and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then last year I started, because we're getting into, I used to also sub out the engine work. Like we would build, I'd have a contractor build me gen sets. We'd package them. And the problem with that is like, you don't control the quality, right? And we're getting iffy quality and then some bad batch quality that really was painful for us to deal with our customers. So I started doing that in house. I hired a bunch of mechanics and, you know, basically OEM gen sets and everything we produce, we're literally building and designing from scratch in Canada. But last year, when the Bitcoin market slowed down, and that slowed down my plans to expand in the US, like for Bitcoin mining products, I decided to invest in engine rebuilding. So like I started an engine machine shop, and that's that wasn't really so much to serve Upstream Data's needs to repair engines. Currently, it was more so to serve the local market and to also be able to do our own stuff.
Yeah.
Because everything I do, whether it's building buildings, skids for buildings, random like fab, custom fab work for oil field, it's all synergistic with what we're doing with Bitcoin mining. The same people do that work and it'll be the Bitcoin mines. So I'm slowly getting us into what I'm trying to do is like broader oil field services, but also diversity in revenue.
Yeah.
Because the boom bust cycle is really difficult to manage.
In the competitive world of Bitcoin mining, one name stands out: CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner. At CleanSpark, efficiency isn't just a goal, it's our standard. Our sophisticated facilities are built and led by expert teams who care about Bitcoin and the communities we work in. Scale, we've mastered it. Our large-scale operations have set us apart in the industry as examples of community-oriented building. Our track record speaks for itself. We navigate the complexities of the new economy with precision and with skill, continuously achieving operational milestones. Curious about how we do it? We invite you to discover the story behind CleanSpark's success at cleanspark.com.
That's what I wanted to ask you about is, you guys in oil and gas are suckers for pain because you're like on this boom bust cycle with oil and then there's one with Bitcoin, and like timing those cycles is really hard. It seems like you caught one good cycle there.
Yeah. Like it's, of course, Bitcoin cycles are completely independent from the oil and gas market, which is good.
Yeah.
Because if, like when Bitcoin was slowing down there in the last year and a bit after, the FTX triggered the crash, whatever happened, our oil field was doing just getting hotter and hotter.
Yeah.
And even like bringing in this, like starting doing machining, these customers that come in to do the engine machining, they're like looking around our shop and like, what are all these things you're building?
Yeah.
And then like the cogs start turning. So it's even some of these guys that come in to do this, they're like, well, we could use this.
Yeah.
Like on our sites or as a like, or work with their own customers and, and then we end up building for them.
Okay.
So like, it's slowly like doing one thing well is leading to another opportunity. And then we get into doing that and just organically integrating more and more stuff so we can have a broader business.
Do you guys denominate anything in Bitcoin, like on balance sheet and stuff like that? Or
I'm always stacking way too many sats.
Yeah. Personally or business-wise?
No, I mean business-wise. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, most of our sales go to the U.S.
Yeah.
So I'm always, we always have USD income, we have Canadian income, and we have Bitcoin income. We don't do a lot of self-mining. So the self-mining income isn't even a drop in the bucket compared to just sales and services.
Yeah.
But I basically just balance a treasury between the three currencies. Canadian dollars, I literally keep razor thin.
Yeah.
I always keep our Canadian treasury the worst because it's
Trudeau cuckfucks.
Yeah, you said it. I didn't say it.
I'm not Canadian. I can't get in prison for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the US dollar is stronger. And then all of our vendors who are overseas, if it's Asian vendors, like for parts we're buying, like PDUs and stuff, like they accept USD. so we can wire them USD. Canadian dollars is basically good for nothing outside of Canada, and it inflates faster than the US dollar. So I basically hold the Canadian treasury always just enough to meet payroll. And some local contractors, and then the we got a window washer going up. And I keep the USD in Bitcoin. Sort of like, we don't trade. I just sort of like, when the time's right, we try to pay all invoices in Bitcoin if we can. And then if the time's right, we'll just, I'll just sell a chunk of Bitcoin, top up the fiat treasury. Really basic stuff.
Okay, not trying to like pry too much into that, but
I don't mind.
It's interesting from like, you guys are oil and gas services and manufacturing company, but also have like this Bitcoin component. So like, how do you like balance that out? And have you like proselytized, I think I said that correctly, to other oil and gas people about treasury management with Bitcoin at all?
Yeah, I have. Like, I've been on a bunch of local podcasts, like oil and gas related. And I mean, I broadly would say to any business, like, you don't have to be into the Bitcoin or energy space at all. If you denominate some of your treasury as your, you know, as your profits are coming in, just like even 1% to like would have a substantial impact on you over a long term. And most companies that are running, you know, are profitable, like you can afford to put 1% of your profits and just stack a Bitcoin treasury. And I've always said, like, whether you're running a pizza parlor, like, I always use the pizza example, because like, what's the most competitive industry in the world? It's probably the restaurant business. And that's a tough business to be successful in. And pizza, like, that's probably even worse. So, I mean, you could be an awesome little pizza place and stack a ton of Bitcoin just by doing good business. And that should pay dividends for you, like, as a long-term savings.
Gotcha. Okay, we're going to work our way back to the beginning of the conversation with Texas. Transition here. I've seen a lot of videos of you being out here in Texas deploying stuff, or at least like your team is out here deploying stuff. So what are you guys about up to? On where are you guys kind of working at? I'm assuming West Texas, oil and gas fields.
We've been doing a lot of sales to Texas, all around. Oklahoma has been, a lot of sales are going to Oklahoma.
I've heard they've like, you know, gigawatts going online there, here, or well, hundreds of megawatts.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know more than you're going to say.
Well, I mean, I mean, we're, I can't say we're doing hundreds of megawatts in Oklahoma. I'd like to say that, but, you know, the one nice thing about like, you know, miner pricing being down, and I foresee it staying down for a little while. You know, I think a lot of, all these big orders going in, cause hash price is okay right now. It's not crazy exciting, and the halving's coming. And there's, I would imagine there's going to be high inventories of miners that are idle for the foreseeable future. I mean, that could very quickly change. But it's actually good, because the guys that are wanting to, you know, you might be a small oil and gas operator and you have stranded or waste gas and you're wanting to get going and try it out. We have awesome products for especially guys just wanting to dabble in it, like these small, like fully integrated systems, like our hash generators. And we're actually, I expect those to sell well, even in the bear market. Cause these guys can, like operationally, like pure cash output, you know, ignoring depreciation, like they're running really low OPEX if they're good at running engines, very, very, very low OPEX. And if they have additional emissions reduction, they can like somehow monetize, like offsetting carbon credits or whatever, that just adds value. Or if they have like oil wells, like we've always targeted rate limited oil wells. Like if you have an oil well, but you're not allowed to produce, you're not allowed to pump it off or produce more oil because you have, you're already venting or flaring too much gas, and you're, you might not have permits to go beyond a certain amount. You know, those guys make incremental oil when they take gas away from that rate limited flare or rate limited vent that they're allowed to do. And so like the unit economics of applying Bitcoin mines to those kinds of assets are outstanding. Just because of that incremental oil production. And then some companies have been successful getting like carbon emissions credits and for like methane emissions reduction. You know, like is our, the cool thing about our small products, for example, these little hash generators, you know, we get a lot of people using them for these small vent applications. Like they're normally venting methane.
Yeah.
Because like say in Canada, the rules are getting tighter.
Yeah.
But when I started the company, especially you're allowed to vent a certain amount of methane and no penalties, like just vent it away into the wind.
Yeah.
And the reason they do that is because even investing in a flare or a combustor, just a more efficient flare, it's very expensive. And then there's all this permitting requirements and, you know, issues.
Yeah.
So they'll just vent it. And applying one of our little hash generators to that site does an immense amount of like emissions reduction.
Yeah.
Like true emissions reduction off actually taking methane that was being vented and now running it through a generator.
Yeah.
Way more than like a flare, because a flare is already combusting it. So it's already getting destroyed as environmentally friendly as they can manage.
How many units can you put on one of those little boxes you guys have? The smallest units.
Like how many units of like miners?
Yeah, like miners are...
The smallest one we sell now, we used to have a smaller version, but we won't sell into the US anymore because we need EPA certified engines and these are non-certified. They're good for Canada.
Yeah.
The smallest one.
Surprising, good for Canada, but not for the US.
We don't have EPA requirements yet on the engines, but that's also changing in Canada.
Yeah. Okay.
Just having like the catalytic, catalyst and other controls that keep efficient combustion and low NOx. And the smallest one we build is a 50 kilowatt system, which we still build. And that only runs like 12 miners. But a lot of guys like that because they're like mom and pop guys and they can afford that. And even if they're going bigger and planning to go bigger, it's a great sampler. You go deploy that little unit, it has all the same controls that the big units will have. And it's a perfect sample for what you get if you start scaling.
Yeah.
It's like even one unit will give you the proof you need for your unit economics to forecast what you can do if you go bigger into like megawatts. So
I'm in Denver. Adams County is right next door, and you guys sell to, I think, a few people out there.
Yeah.
And so I haven't seen them myself, but I've seen photos like the Denver Post and stuff like that when there was like a lot of conversations around your guys' product being used in the field to reduce methane, and then the journalists got confused and then attacked you guys and trying to like push it out of the county.
Adams County in particular seemed to be, I haven't gone to the hearings personally, but we've sent some of our staff to support our customer there and to help educate the people making the rules. But they're generally very anti-oil in Colorado, it seems like especially certain counties. I can't really comment on the state level, but
no, it's like across the board now. It's like,
they're very much not interested in oil and gas companies improving their operations so they keep surviving. They seem to want to kill them. I don't want to project what's, you know, I don't know enough, but certainly like Renegade Oil and Gas is one of our customers in the area, and he's been having to deal with a lot of bureaucracy and red tape. From simply optimizing his wells, like he's actually applying our technology to reduce emissions, and he's can do that economically, like without sinking it into a flare or a combustor, just wasting money. And he's actually applying the tech the right way. And despite that, because they don't understand the tech and this wasn't, we didn't have pre-written permit rules for this. It's like, rather than allow the industry to find its place, they're just like trying to crush it it's very anti-technology, very, very communist.
It is. It's like anti-personal property or private property.
Right? Yeah.
Like, how does that even exist is something. But Colorado has that. I'm in downtown Denver and there's like an energy center, but it's like empty now. It's like a bunch of skyscrapers. No one's down there. Used to be a big thing.
Yeah.
Doesn't really exist anymore.
Well, gas is still pretty important in Colorado, like it's to their GDP. I was in there visiting Mesa, a really awesome rental company, natural gas generators. Their R&D facility is just north of Denver. I can't remember the town, but I just went to a bar and met some oil and gas guys. Like the oil and gas industry is there, but it doesn't seem to be a great place for me.
No.
It was funny because I walked into that place like, me and Hank, my CFO, just to hang out and go meet the Mesa team the next day. And some random guy. It was the first time ever outside of a Bitcoin like event that someone recognized me.
Oh, nice.
So like, the oil industry is like really turning on to the Bitcoin scene.
Yeah.
And they're like watching podcasts like this.
Let's go.
So it's
10x our listenership.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get some oil sponsors, a little more money, maybe.
All this good. Really, this really, I started my career I really started my career like outside of a student in 2011. And we were on that uptick to 2014 where the oil prices went nuts.
Yeah.
And so far, what I saw then in terms of the money that got thrown around, it made Bitcoin mining look like child's play.
Yeah.
In terms of
still.
Yes. I've been through two. I started in 2016 in terms of being in the industry.
Yeah.
So I've been involved, I guess you would say, in the, I was actively mining on oil wells in 2017 through that run up. And then, so I've seen a couple bull cycles now and they were pretty frothy. Like they're getting, you know, the last one was a little crazy with what people were doing, like doing a lot of really bad deals, like get it done now and we'll figure it out later. And then they're all bankrupt. But you know, as frothy as it was, I still feel it doesn't really hold a candle to an oil and gas bull market based on my personal experience.
Yeah.
Because what people were doing, like throwing money around, I couldn't believe it. Like I was fresh out of school.
Yeah.
And I'm just like mind boggled.
Well, that's good to hear. Like there's more money coming in this space. That's bullish.
Well, man, the Bitcoin mining industry is really early still. Yeah. It's really only getting started. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's gonna be more of that.
Do you haven't been through basically three cycles? This will be your third. For Bitcoin, right?
I guess so, yeah.
17 and 21.
I'm still not on full board that we're truly in the bull. I am in the sense, like clearly the price, but I have a mining mentality. So it's hash price that I care about.
Yeah.
And, you know, the near term forecast for hash price is not too exciting with the halving coming, right? But of course, everyone, you know, it's not, everyone's thinking about the same things, but. Long term, I have no
qualms.
There's no hesitancy on knowing that this is the right industry to keep innovating in and establishing ourselves in. So,
well, so you're well known for calling people out or practices out.
Am I
not people necessarily, but practices out?
I would say I'm saying well known for being just a straight up
you get your opinion.
Yeah, and I'm wrong all the time, but like I'll at least, you know, I like to say I'm a straight shooter, so I'm just gonna say what I think.
Yeah.
And I treat like social media like a diary.
Yeah.
And it's probably quite negative for me a lot of times because I'll talk about as a CEO, president of Upstream, sometimes I'm like, I should probably temper my personal outlook because I could make more sales like if I just jump in on the on the bull like memes. But yeah, I am a little known to be a contrarian.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. And that's like tee up the question too much, but we're going to your third cycle. Do you get tired of calling that out or like do you get tired?
I'm exhausted of it. Yeah, so yeah. You actually don't see me stirring too much stuff up as much. I mean, I'm a technologist. I'm interested in the tech and I don't mind saying what I think when people are hyping tech that makes no sense to me. I mean, there's like a million examples. Like one recent one that keeps coming up is like using heat from mining on say oil and gas operations and like people talking about, you know, cause the water cooling stuff is really cool and there's more usable heat out of a water system and stuff. Yeah. You can use it, but I've seen people like pitch on that. Like on tech that they're going to use like their immersion or water cooling system and use the heat to help optimize an oil and gas facility. I'm like, guys, like, you can't mine Bitcoin without a generator. And the generator has way more usable heat, not just in actual heat load itself, but hotter temperature usable heat. And we're already using it as much as we can in the oil field. Like, so like, you know, like you get, that's just one little example, but like people will, like, you know, have this idea to push this thing and they're hyping their thing. And it's like, this makes no sense at all. Here's why. Like, I don't mind saying that. I've always really been influenced by, back in the day, it was called Dragon's Den. It started in Canada with Kevin O'Leary.
Mm-hmm.
Then he, you know, did Shark Tank. So the Americans here probably know Kevin O'Leary through Shark Tank. So
yeah.
Kevin was always that guy, like, you just told the investor or the guy pitching mm-hmm. exactly what he thought, right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the best way to be, in my view. Like,
yeah,
unless, depending on what your strategy is, but if just being straight up
yeah.
about what you think, whether you're right or wrong, is just the right
yeah.
mentality, in my view.
Okay, Noel, now I'm going to bat them to you, and we'll see if you want to swing. Do you like AI and Bitcoin mining stuff? That's actually the only one I really wanted to ask you about, so I won't do it too much.
Well, do I like it? I like AI as much as the next guy.
Yeah.
I know as little as much as the next guy.
Yeah.
I don't think they're very similar in any way. I mean, AI broadly, it's computing like Bitcoin mining is. Bitcoin mining, though, there's no third party. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you plug computers in, the network is a third party. You're not contracting with any third parties. The beauty about Bitcoin, of course, is you don't need redundancy.
Yeah.
You don't need backup generators, or you don't need backup power. You don't need, you know, high bandwidth internet connections and reliable internet connections. You know, still today, most of our deployments are on cellular
mm-hmm.
and like in the, not the strongest signals mm-hmm. and it works just fine. AI needs a lot more. It's also like it's becoming more energy dense than it has been in the past, like mm-hmm. basically high performance computing, but it still doesn't really hold a candle to the density of Bitcoin mining. So like when you're, you know, stuff that we specialize in, like portable, modular, small, big stuff, I don't see, I don't see how I can integrate, say, AI, like high performance computing, mm-hmm. load centers, or in this case, yeah. data centers,
yeah.
for this kind of target market I have, which is actually optimizing energy systems yeah. broadly, like optimizing power plants, optimizing oil and gas, stranded energy. And I mean, I see a lot of the Bitcoin, so mostly the public guys, like venture into it.
All the public guys.
Yeah. And I don't feel like
70%. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's some overlap in skill sets, but I don't think there's a lot.
Yeah.
And you don't need to source as cheap energy for AI computing as you do for Bitcoin mining.
Uh-huh.
I think reliability is more important. And I think that's the major difference is you don't need any reliability really in Bitcoin mining. That's why, you know, in Texas it's such a big deal, because
yeah.
you can just curtail whenever it makes sense. Or if you're on an oil well, like part of the talk I was talking about, using surplus prime movers, like generators that are running oil and gas facilities, to take all the surplus power to mine Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if we shut the Bitcoin load off while the site loads ramp up.
Mm-hmm.
And that they might only ramp up temporarily, like just depending on what the site, you know, mm-hmm. what's being powered, like pumps turning on and off, their transfer pumps, different facilities that they're powering. But that's the beauty of Bitcoin money. You just shut it off and you've lost nothing, and you turn yeah. back on, you're just always streaming money at the same hash price, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Need ASIC help? Check out Bitamine, one of Bitmain's certified repair shops located in Washington State, with satellite offices in Colorado, Oklahoma, and Texas. PSUs, hashboards, immersion setups, in and out of warranty repair, Bitamine has you covered. Want to train your technicians? Bring Bitamine to your site for hands-on training in the art of ASIC repair, complete with Bitmain AMTC certification. Contact Bitamine today at dan@vmasic.com. Again, that's dan@vmasic.com. When you think of ASIC repair, think Bitamine.
There's some oil and gas Bitcoin miners trying to do the AI stuff.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, AI is a fashionable right now,
yeah.
and it deserves to be.
It's, yeah.
I do think that, you know, that's a good thing I've been wrong about, because yeah. years ago, you know, all these hype words people use, AI was one of them, that I'm like, oh, you're strapping AI to your pitch, like,
yeah.
you know, it's just like blockchain. It was like the, you know, the guys throwing blockchain into everything, and they yeah. throw AI, machine learning, into everything. But it's very evident now that, like, I use ChatGPT all the time.
Yep.
I get it to check, yeah. like, you know, I'll have it
through contracts and things like
that. Yeah, I'll write a letter of intent and just, like, you know, yeah. run it through there or something, and
yeah.
and it's really useful. So my mind's definitely changed on the actual market for AI.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I don't think there's a ton of crossover with Bitcoin mining, to be honest. But I understand why companies are leaning into it, because it's really hard to raise money in the Bitcoin world.
Yeah.
Always has been.
Yeah.
AI is something that, you know, legacy, you know, institutional finance is super excited about. So it totally makes sense to, like, and some of these guys will probably do it well.
Mm.
Right. Like, I wouldn't count anybody out. I just don't think the skill sets and the system integration actually has a lot of overlap with Bitcoin mining.
Well, you're a big Aircool fan, so I'm going to kind of tie these two things together. I know some Bitcoin miners are trying to make better air-cooled mines so they can plug AI stuff in there. But the question, of course, comes back to, like, the system itself are designed for two different things. So why plug them in together? In the traditional data center world, like, dust is a huge thing. Can't have dust in there. Like, people wear full body suits when they go into, like, their data center. Bitcoin mining, like, you can dump an ASIC and, like, there's stuff going out of it.
Yeah.
Coal
finds. I've pulled apart S9s that were in coal mines, literally in the mine that guys were mining it in, and we're blowing the coal out of it.
Yeah.
You know, buying them from brokers that we don't know where they came from, but they clearly came from a coal mine or like full of bugs. Or I've seen Kaboom Racks post one with a dead mouse in the, that's the kind of way
saw people. Some from Compass had moss in the fans. They came from, they weren't their machines. They came from somewhere else, but this had moss growing in the fans.
Yeah.
It's
just because when the market goes nuts, people just, wherever you can throw these machines in, like, they don't really care. But
it's bad. Okay, so back to the question. Like, I know some of these big mega miners are trying to put the pitch together that, like, hey, we've developed these Bitcoin mines over the last 3 years. We've made them, like, really airtight and secure. We're going to throw AI stuff into it. I'm not going to, like, keep pushing on this question, but it does feel like a LARP to me. And, like, how does that play out?
Well, I hadn't heard of people talking about using air cooling for AI, because I think most of these H100 high performance machines or like these GPUs are water cooled.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have really any experience in the data center industry, but I have toured a pretty high end, forget the brand, but it's like a really well known established supercomputing brand. But they had a bunch of these racks and they're all water cooled.
Okay.
So I'm an air and water cooled interested. Like,
yeah,
I've always been known to not like immersion.
Yeah.
So I'm not into immersion.
Yeah.
Just because I think between air and water cooling, mm-hmm. it covers everything.
Mm-hmm.
Air is always going to be the cheapest cooling method. You know, obviously everything's cooled by air anyway. Yeah. And so it's the simplest system. So I'm interested in continuing to improve
mm-hmm.
the air cooling systems from just overall reliability in all climates.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy if other people don't think air cooling has any place, because I mean, you have to make a decision. Like, does air have a spot in the future? I cannot predict the future, but
yeah,
I think it does. So I'm going to keep trying to build amazing products for air cooling as well.
Yeah.
And then I decided about 2 or 3 years ago that while I was sort of evaluating, like, would we get into immersion? Because in this last bull run that peaked in whenever 2021, 22, immersion got extremely frothy.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was talking about immersion in every trade show, like Empower that we're at today. You know, you see all these guys showing off their
bathtubs.
Bathtubs. Yeah. That's what I call them. a lot of them were probably only good for bathtubs based on what was produced. But
yeah.
But I think all the benefits you get out of an immersion system, you basically get out of a water cooling system.
Yeah.
And so I like water cooling and air cooling generally. And I think the AI industry, or the high performance computing industry, mm-hmm. seems to be water cool driven.
Mm-hmm.
But, you gotcha. Know, so like I have heard of guys like working on like these server racks that can accommodate both mm-hmm. like Bitcoin mining and GPUs. Like, I think that's like their plan is that, mm-hmm. you know, they build out data center infrastructure or load centers if they're mining Bitcoin, but you know, they can be dual purpose.
Yeah.
I'm not interested personally in that. I'm only interested in Bitcoin mining and oil fields technology. So like, you're not going to see unless like I have to bring on some guy that completely changes direction for us or something. Like you're not going to see Upstream Data getting into AI computing in any way.
Okay, put that stamp there. We know.
Yeah,
that.
I so shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't AI have said company. That when I'm working to raise money and I have on my pitch deck, we're going to be doing AI. By the way,
AI in the oil field.
Yeah.
Okay, I have two more questions for you, and they're way abstracted away from what we've kind of talked about so far. First one is like doing business in Bitcoin. You've obviously had a very established company at this point. People know who you are. People know the Upstream brand. They know what it represents. Starting a new cycle, how should someone get into this business again? What are the best steps? And what are the ways, like, not falling into these stupid pitfalls and dealing with all these like LARP ideas and companies? So I feel like it's really, really hard to do the first year in Bitcoin, and there's going to be, you know, tons of new entrants, just like there was last cycle.
Yeah. Well, the answer to that, of course, is just trust everything I tell you and just buy my products and don't question anything. No. I mean, I could say from my vantage point, like the customers that we've had like, because we've been so broad in what we offer, like we'll offer little like black boxes for home miners, bigger black boxes for commercial miners, like this new white box product.
Which looks very cool.
And that's a niche for like 40 volt mining, but all this other variations on stuff we offer, like I'd say Upstream, like we've been most broad out of really any business that does what we do, like Bitcoin mining hardware infrastructure, on like how you can apply our products. Like we can really do products for almost every Bitcoin application.
Yeah.
Which has its pros and cons. One of the cons, I won't call it a con, but like because we can serve all these different markets, we have a lot of customers and a lot of small ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the common theme I see with our customer base, especially anything in natural gas, is I know I learned a lot from the last cycle, like selling equipment to, say, the Bitcoin mining people who didn't come from oil field and don't understand power generation and thought that it would be easy.
Yeah.
And don't quite understand all the nuance on how natural gas is produced and all the interruptions and problems that can arise. And they didn't work out their contracts properly.
Yeah.
They're very one-sided. Yeah. For the oil company, for example. And a lot of people, you know, especially anytime I'm involved in the sales call and, you know, they're talking about their terms, I'll straight up tell them, I think it's a terrible contract.
You got screwed, man.
And I'm like, I don't want to lose the sale. Yeah. Like, but I'm just telling you, like, you should probably revise your contract. Like,
what kind of contract structures do you like, by the way? That's actually something we brought up on the show, I think, last 3 months a few times. I've had emails about this recently too, which I know that means like things are picking up again.
Yeah.
Like I'm not the person to ask for contract details. So I'd love to have a soundbite that I can just send to people. Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, there's like utility contracts, which I've never dealt with a utility. Like I'm honestly a competitor, you know, like any Bitcoin miner I view as a competitor to a utility, because utilities are the guys mating the generation to the load. And we're just interested in the generation. Like we don't need utilities. You just co-locate at the power plant, right? So I've never got involved with like PPAs. I've never been involved in any way.
Yeah.
A lot of our customers have. But I mean, say oil field.
Yeah.
And broadly in business, I fundamentally believe that every contract needs to have shared risk.
Mm-hmm.
Some amount of shared risk.
Mm-hmm.
And what I commonly see, say in the oil field side, where people buy like our hash generators and then they contract the oil company, way too common. The contracts are very one-sided on risk.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Bitcoin miner who bought our equipment is taking all the risk, and there's no performance penalties by the gas producer. And unfortunately, I mean, part of that is because in order to get deals done, if they go and say, hey, like I'll buy your gas at, you know, 50 cents per MCF or something, like cheap.
Yeah.
And they have the gas and it's just being flared normally. Like, yeah, go park off to the side of release, stay out of our way.
Yeah.
We'll sell you that garbage gas we're burning for 50 cents. I will never pay an oil company for garbage gas.
Yeah.
What we'll do, just because the risk share isn't, the risk profile does not make sense, because when things go sideways and there's a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
Because what is killing all the Bitcoin miners' earnings? It's depreciation, generally. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that, like, you're buying miners, you never truly pay them out, you're buying more, you know, you're not really getting ahead on true net earnings. And so downtime is a big function of that. And so, unfortunately, like, that's part of the problem that I see, like, a lot of these contracts where our customers are just buying gas and there's no, like, performance penalties if they don't supply the gas,
yeah,
for example. And it's hard to get them to agree to performance penalty because if they're already flaring it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also why you don't see upstream, like, going after flares,
yeah,
like sites with flares, because I've always considered if you're flaring, outside of it's, like, rate limited, like, you're maxed out on your flaring limits,
mm-hmm,
which isn't really common in Texas. You can often just flare as much as you want. And that, of course, is likely going to change as well. But
yeah,
they're already dealing with the problem. And at that point, you know, you're just there and you're just like, you're like, yeah, you can reduce our flare. That's good for us. We get to report less reportable flaring volumes.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these guys, unless they're in a situation where regulators are forcing them to care about emissions, they don't really care about emissions.
Yeah.
I might say so publicly, but on the ground, they don't care at all. So I like structures where there got to be shared risk. And so one example is, we do this mostly in Canada, but we're likely going to do it in the US. It seems to be people like it. The oil company will buy our generator and own and operate it. And if they don't maintain it and they destroy it, we don't care. It's your generator. But we're here to actually maintain it for you as a contractor. And of course, we don't want them to destroy their generator. But when they own the generator, they take care of it. If they don't own the generator or have any skin in the game on that, then they don't take care of it. So we'll do these. We call them a distributed power purchase agreement. You can, like, buy our hash generator in Canada. Mm-hmm. You own it, we'll fill it up with miners and service it for you on a contract, and we'll pay for your power at a fixed fee.
Okay.
Yeah, because they basically bought a fixed asset
that
doesn't depreciate like a miner does. And because they're not taking any volatility risk on the mining, we just pay them like as if we're a virtual utility company.
Yeah.
And just, we'll pay you X cents, and there's a performance derate if your well goes down and we're down all month.
Yeah.
We're cool. Like, we're not even going to call you, like, because you're just going to get paid less on the rate.
Gotcha.
We have, like, a scaling factor.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a really good, you know, because they've invested in the iron.
Mm-hmm.
We've invested in some iron, the miners, and we're effectively, they're basically hosting for us.
Yeah.
And you only do that really just to get them going, like, as a...
Yeah.
Because... we've always mostly just like sold stuff. So they'd be the miner and we'd just help them out.
Yeah.
If they need us like to manage it.
Yeah. And that's what I've said to most people is like, do some sort of JV where both teams can lose if you're losing, but both teams win together if you're making money.
And there's a lot of ways to do that.
Yeah.
Like revenue, like some guys are revenue splits. My buddy Joel, I mentioned earlier, I don't know if he's doing this anymore, but he was doing some projects where he is buying the gas, but it's in equity. So like there's no cash transfer. It's in equity of the asset.
Oh, nice.
That's on site. And that's a nice way of doing it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they basically own that asset as well.
Gotcha.
They're willing to take care of it.
Gotcha. So
they're seeing that, like we own this generator.
Yeah.
We just got to fuel it with gas. We're just burning. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a good way to do it.
Okay. I took us down a rabbit hole there with the contracts, but back to the, how should people enter Bitcoin mining right now? Any like high level thoughts on like resources or people to follow, things to like keep in mind going into it?
I think there's a lot of people that want to get into Bitcoin mining that are like, why? I mean, part of it is like
keeping the competition out, huh?
Don't get in our industry. We're all getting rich super fast. It's like I was joking yesterday. It's like some people still perceive it as like get rich quick. I just say it's like get poor slow. That's what we were talking about yesterday. It comes down to like that depreciation aspect has been what really hurts the most miners. But I mean, I always just say like you shouldn't be forcing it. Like you shouldn't be getting into Bitcoin mining because you want to get into Bitcoin mining.
Yeah,
you should, especially as this continues to industrialize and like, you know, home mining, like small scale mining is a niche thing that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
People are stacking like non-KYC sats.
Yeah.
And their value they put on that is their own subjective value, really. So if they're mining break even,
Yeah.
To them, they're basically just buying the Bitcoin at par, and it's non-KYC. And for them, that's what they want.
Yeah.
You know, there's that market for that, and that market will always exist. And it'll always probably be a very small fraction of the global hash rate, right? But it'll just always persist.
So it's thinking like more so get into Bitcoin mining if it makes sense from a business perspective. Like,
I think you need to have a problem you're fixing.
Yeah.
Like I see Bitcoin mining as a tool.
Yeah.
It's just another tool. Yeah. So like it's best suited for people who make power.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're generating power on a micro scale, like small generators at oil facilities,
yeah,
you likely have an excellent project on your hands.
Yeah.
You know, like you can take an asset you've already invested in, a generator that's running your facility, and you're having problems with it because you have to run it through a load bank to keep it healthy. Why don't you just shut that load bank off and put in one of our load centers?
Yeah.
And like the cost of a load center is already basically the same as a load bank.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to buy the miners yourselves. You can have any of your friends put them in your building, your business partners or upstream data will do it for you.
Yeah.
And you're now actually not just mining Bitcoin and getting the normal unit economics of mining Bitcoin, but you're also solving that other problem.
Yeah.
So in many presentations I've done, I call it like, I only go after liabilities. Like if you don't have a problem, there's no reason for me to be working with you because I'm a service provider. If you don't have a problem, like why am I there? Like why would I show up to your site with a few megawatts of generators and Bitcoin mines to take this garbage gas that you're happy to burn? If you don't need me there, why I don't want to be there.
Yeah.
So it's,
I like that mentality.
Yeah. I just don't want to be, if you don't value me and what we do, then we're not a service provider and now we're a customer.
Yeah.
And that's not what our business is. So I'm happy not to do projects like that.
Yeah.
But I broadly for people, and I get these questions all the time, like through social media, like, hey, I want to get like a little hash hut and set it up and like anything, like if they're asking me direct, they'll say like, what's your application? Like, you know, like what are you trying to do? And unless they have like really cheap power, I'm like, that looks like a good project, but like your power costs are like 10 cents. Like you're going to make money for a very brief time, but you're going to get murdered by depreciation. Like, so are you just like, what's the end game for you here?
To mine Bitcoin and talk to your friends about it. That's normally what it is.
Yeah. So I just think energy systems is where it fits.
Like,
and making energy systems more efficient.
Okay.
So mega mines today on the grid. Maybe more distributed, but smaller mega mines in the future, like, you know, more at the generation facilities.
Okay. One more oil and gas question and then something we're going to pivot to and then we'll close up.
Yeah.
I'm picking up what I'm going to call like the upstream effect or the giga effect where everyone is chasing distributed gas wells where they can plug in boxes right now. Like I've talked to a lot of people this week and then over the last few months that they're now just working at a new oil and gas company or an energy company and they're chasing stranded gas somewhere. Is that overplayed? Is that just like the effect of like Giga getting on Vice and like you going viral all the time and people like seeing like the nice colorful photos? It kind of feels like there's a lot of people chasing like what is a pretty small market, like in the grand size. Like there's a lot of flaring out there, yes, but
so you're seeing a lot of that even in oil field.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're seeing it too. Like every time Bitcoin gets exciting, our sales inquiries go through the roof.
Yeah.
And the more that gets out there and the more successful people are, like it, you know, word of mouth and you know, each cycle to become more robust. We're seeing that. And a lot of these, you know, we're getting more calls than ever from mom and pop producers and they have the right application.
Yeah.
Like it makes it a lot of sense for them. And they have the right, you know, they got pumpers who know how to like handle engines and stuff. And like, you're our ideal customer.
Yeah.
You're exactly who we market to. So, I mean, I think people are getting pretty excited about it. Again, for off-grid, you know, oil and gas mining, doesn't mean that all of these applications that they're talking about make sense. Cause we still get, you know, like, normally, if you're selling gas already, you might not be happy with your fees, but it, you know, that's
Yeah.
You know, you already have a pipeline, so it might, you know, we get a lot of inquiries from guys like that. It might not be the best application. You might have other facilities that you could target first.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a lot more applicable and better payouts. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways to get Bitcoin. Like, you don't have to mine it. Like, if you're really just looking to speculate on Bitcoin. So, yeah, to me, it's got to be like, it's got to be helping someone with a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I guess somewhat of a riff on the last question, but I do feel like that narrative is picking up right now. Now people are chasing it and see if that market really exists larger than it is. Okay. Finish up with ordinals. Because I know you love ordinals.
Yeah. Do I?
I feel like you do. You're into chats.
I don't mind. Yeah. I liked. So let's say, just want me to comment on ordinals?
Comment. I might have a question in a second.
Yeah, that's fine. So when ordinals, okay, so when the NFT boom was happening, like on Ethereum, that was like one topic. I don't think I was ever out there like being a contrarian on or something like on Twitter, like, because I personally recognize that people like to gamble.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, that's true. Like, every one of my buddies
does
sports betting.
Yeah.
I don't. We like to gamble among each other on random things. We like playing poker, you know. So I see the NFT thing always as a speculative thing. And I honestly don't care if people value something that I don't value. Like, that's their thing, and that's cool. You know, like Marathon, you know, probably I haven't really checked Twitter since they did this, but you know, they just mined that big M block.
Yeah.
And just to use like mempool.space is like graphical interface to show amazing marketing, right? Yeah. Like, incredible marketing. And a lot of people are likely very upset over that. Like, oh, you're abusing block space. But in the end of the day, it's an open system. Bitcoin's designed for anyone to use, and I really have no judgment on how you want to use it. I really don't care.
Yeah.
And I guess you could say, you know, a lot of the Bitcoin miners, there's subsets of them, of course, like Ocean Pool, not into the NFTs, but, and that's fine. Like, that's their, I think that's great. Like, that's your view. But I really do not care what you do with Bitcoin at all. And if you want to mint really silly JPEGs because you're speculating on it.
Yeah.
I don't think it has any more value than the speculative value of people who like doing that.
Yeah.
So when ordinals, like when Casey came out with it in like early 2023, like when he sort of described it and it started happening, and I saw it, and you know, it was really early at Bitcoin Twitter before anyone really knew about it. I called Nick from Luxor because he was already talking about it and like getting involved. Like, I was like, buddy, mint me this really stupid image I made on AI of Greta Thunberg holding a bowl of coal. I'm like, I want that in high resolution because I just like stirring shit up. So I just got him to do that. Because even right when the ordinals was coming, I'm like, okay, everyone's going to be pissed about NFTs on Bitcoin. But I always thought, like, I don't care what you do with Bitcoin. And I think it's great that you're abusing block space, because the fact that I can't stop you makes me love Bitcoin even more.
Yeah.
Even if I don't want people doing that, like I said, I don't care. But like, if you want to spend a bunch of sats, like paying miners fees, like, that's cool. I'm certainly not budgeting for like hash price to, you know, be sustained by speculative. Like, no. It's nice when it runs up. That's a nice thing about when you're into Bitcoin. If you're only using Bitcoin, never mining it, you're never happy with high fee congestion. But when you're mining it, you're like super pleased.
Yeah.
Like, because we're all starving here in the mining industry. So,
yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, thanks for joining the Mining Pod. Where can we follow you or people get to know what you guys are doing, your products?
Yeah, Upstream Data is just upstreamdata.com. And me personally, SG Barber on Twitter. If you want to get triggered all the time, I guess.
It's a good place to get triggered. Cool. We'll see you. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ben.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.